Good afternoon. We apologize for the delay. Just a little bit of assembling all the panelists together. So we appreciate your being here. My name is Jeff Beckwith. I'm the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Municipal Association. And it's the MMA's pleasure to host the weekly briefings by the Baker-Polito administration to the Municipal Chief Executive Officers of Massachusetts, providing the latest information on the COVID-19 public health emergency. There's a lot that's been going on. We also changed the time of this session because the Lieutenant Governor has an entire day that is just packed, and she is available now at for this conference until about 12:30, at which point she will depart, and we will have other agency officials making updates and presentations and answering questions. We welcome you to this seventh weekly briefing of the COVID-19 public health emergency. So at this point, we are searching to connect us to the Lieutenant Governor. And I will be notified when she is with us, and we will then immediately go to the Lieutenant Governor. Let us work on that.
Can you hear me now? This is Karen.
Yes, we can, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we have opened this session, this briefing, and the floor is now yours.
Okay, thank you very much. Happy to have time with you. I am with you through the Q&A too. My time is adjusted a bit today. So I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you once again for everything you've done over the course of this past week. Let me just give you some updates. And I the most valuable part of this for me is the ability to hear what your questions, concerns are, and how we can continue to work together, which is how we are going to persevere here. So the first thing I'd like to just update is around the reopening advisory board, which we announced last week. It is a terrific group of people, including three municipal leaders, three public health medical leaders, and the rest are business owners, CEO types, statewide voices and representation. What we have accomplished over the course of this past week and what we'll continue to push through this week are a number of engagements with both industry associations, you know, that represent individual business owners and members, and community coalitions. We've been able to reach over 25 industry associations now, which represents hundreds of thousands of businesses and many, many workers. Today, we heard from, for instance, the Associated General Contractors. Yesterday, Mass Taxpayers Foundation. We have a number of groups lined up daily and throughout through Saturday and early into next week. Let me just lay out a little bit of the process and what we're looking for from these groups. First of all, there is a website which you are most likely aware of that anyone can present their request for reopening and address the areas that we're looking for input around. Like, what is your readiness as a business or an industry? What are the barriers to reopening in terms of including the safety protocols that we're asking employers to include in their workplaces? And what are the enablers that might be needed in order for your workforce to get back into the workplace, like public transportation or childcare? We're looking at issuing, so they can submit online or they'd be part of a panel presenting to the advisory board. And then there are some follow-up one-on-one engagements to dive deeper into what the industry needs are. There is overarching guidance that we're working on around what a safe workplace looks like. We need to make sure it's safer for the worker as well as the customer or visitor who would do business with that employer. And so things around social distancing are key. Preparing your worker with the face coverings and sanitization, having hand washing stations within the workplace. What are the staffing issues associated with the virus and how to handle that as an employer are some of the examples that we're exploring deeply with the industry groups. So a lot of people are asking, so what is May 18th? What does that date mean? And some think that that's could be a magical date where, you know, the Commonwealth messages it's open for business. That's not what it is. May 18th is the date that the advisory board will present its reopening plan. Now, you're seeing in other states, I think including Rhode Island, laid out their reopening plan yesterday. If you wanted to take a quick look at that, you would kind of get a glimpse into what we'll be presenting that works for Massachusetts on May 18th. And what that means is a couple of things. First of all, the public health metrics have to be met. And that means that we need to have a 10 to 14 day period, as you've heard from the federal guidance and other states, of downward trends. And when that is accomplished, that triggers the ability to then reopen certain activities and workplaces. And the effort of this advisory board is to sort of triage what are the easier to turn on businesses and then what needs to be phased in over a period of time. So there may be phases within an industry, and then there just may be industries that will be able to open earlier and some will be later. So that's what May 18th will be about. I did want to give you an example, though, of something that came to us. The first presenter was the retail industry. And the retail industry said, while our retail stores might not open until a little bit further down the line, there's one thing that we would like to have the essential, non-essential guidance changed for. And that would be for our retailers to be able to fulfill online and phone orders. And in order to do that, they needed to have brought back into the workplace some people to be able to do that. So for instance, in a 10,000 square foot space, a maximum of 3 employees would be allowed on the premises to fulfill orders. 10 to 30,000 square feet, 5 employees. Facilities over 30,000 square feet, a maximum of 7 employees, just to fulfill orders and then mail them or deliver them. We would not allow under this change a curbside pickup at one of these places, but the ability to process inventory and fulfill orders is something that the retail association asked us to do, and we were able to update our guidance overnight, and that is now allowed in your community. Happy to take more questions about that if you'd like. So that process will continue. We're getting a lot of calls about different things that industries might like to see happen earlier, whether soon after May 18th, and some have even requested some things now. Our focus primarily is on the safe reopening of our Commonwealth and doing that in a phased-in approach May 18th and after, depending on the public health metrics. I do want to also just talk about tomorrow, May 6th, is the official day of the face covering order, which I'm sure all of you have had a chance to review and understand what that means in your community. And it means that when you do go out, if you cannot social distance, then you will need to cover your mouth and nose with a mask or a face covering. And this order applies to both workers and customers of businesses and other organizations open to the public. So that begins tomorrow. The DPH guidance is issued, and that is something that I'd be happy to talk about further with you if you have questions as well. In terms of testing, you know, we continue to make that a big part of our program. Because it's a way that we can gauge where the virus is spreading or how effective we are at containing it. So that will continue to be part of our program, and contact tracing obviously will remain a big part of how we move forward with reopening more activities in the Commonwealth. I do want to highlight a few positive things, though, and you might have heard the governor speak to this yesterday. In the last 7 days, we've had positive test rates coming in a little under 20% every day. That is welcome news. Hospitalizations have been decreasing in the past several days, with very few spikes in admissions. That the percentage of all cases currently hospitalized is at 5%, and our count of cases in the ICU is now below 1,000, with a total of 908 cases. And then that's a hospitalization rate that is definitely trending in the right direction. In terms of personal protective equipment, we're working with other states around a more organized fashion to procure this equipment for the healthcare workers and public safety personnel, and we'll continue to aggressively procure as well as make available this equipment, including masks, gowns, gloves, ventilators, working with our senior facilities, first responders, our front line to keep reinforcing them with these essential pieces of equipment, if you will. And let me just close with that and just say thank you. And I'm happy to listen to your conversation and then just be available for questions.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor. We know that you do need to depart at some point of around 12:30. And so there are a few questions that have come in that might be good to catch you with, and then we can go to some of the other agency updates. A couple regarding...
Sure. I think I can stay on a little longer, so I'm happy to take those questions now and just listen to the others that come up too.
Oh, wonderful. That's terrific. Thank you very much. Regarding the face coverings, there are just a few questions regarding enforceability. One question came in regarding what if someone claims to have a medical reason for not wearing a mask? How do communities confirm this, and how do they deal with that situation in enforceability if it's just someone who doesn't want to wear a mask and is making that claim? And then secondly, as employers, do employers need to make accommodations and allow employees in that are operating in close proximity to the public to not wear masks if they have a reason for claiming an exemption?
Okay, I'm sure that there are some DPH folks on the line that can get into that level of detail. If there is, please respond to that specific question. The enforcement of this order is by both DPH and local authorities, and there are civil penalties associated with it. As you may know, is there anyone on DPH from DPH on the line to talk about medical specific exemptions and how that is processed and how we would relay that information to the municipalities?
Dr. Madoff is joining us, and I'll unmute him right now. And let's see. Here we go.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor, for your remarks. And the DPH guidance, as suggested, will allow for individuals who can't wear a mask for medical reasons. And that includes, for example, children under two and others who, and young children, you know, with the guidance of their parents. But in general, the enforcement of the mask policy will be operationalized at the local level. And so it is going to be up to the local Board of Health to oversee that. And I expect that that's something that we're just going to have to learn about going forward and be reasonable about, make reasonable accommodation for people who can't wear a mask and at the same time, safeguard the public, remembering that the mask is meant to be primarily source control, and so it's to stop someone from inadvertently spreading infection if they were, for example, asymptomatically infected. And so, you know, other measures that can be used would be just to maintain a safe distance in those settings. And of course, to remove anybody who's ill would be asked to not be out in public. But there will be more specific health guidance on those, and it's going to be, you know, because these are such specific issues, it will need to be something that's dealt with on an individual and local level.
Thank you very much. Lieutenant Governor, there's a question that's come in regarding moving to away from the whole idea of essential, non-essential businesses. That we've had a couple of questions regarding that, essentially being interested in resuming operations. But of course, I think that is what the work of the reopening advisory board is all about, is developing those rules and eliminating the distinction between essential and non-essential. Is that correct?
Yes. So this is how you can think about it. And the stay-at-home advisory is in place through May 18th, and the essential, non-essential order is also in place. And the reopening committee and advisory board is evaluating the safety provisions that will guide how places of employment can reopen, and it will trigger the reopening of certain industries or parts of industries, depending on where the public health metrics are at that time, in a phased-in approach. So there might be, for instance, in the initial phase, certain businesses that can more easily adopt the safety provisions, say like a manufacturing facility, where they can easily mark off the physical distance between workstations. They can easily have hand washing stations. They can easily have sanitization and incorporate the safety features that we are designing into their workplace. Yet the a more difficult to open setting could be a bar, for instance, where there is very little seating and smaller location and where people naturally convene closer together. What would that place look like in a COVID-safe environment? We might need to work on those protocols a little bit more before public health would feel comfortable allowing that kind of establishment to open for facility operations. I also know that, for instance, when I talked about the online fulfillment of retail orders, now non-essential retail is still non-essential. However, under the updated order overnight, we will allow that retail non-essential business to bring back a few people, depending on your square footage, to fulfill these online orders, but they're still closed to the public. They have to incorporate the safety features and be able to conduct that business in a very limited fashion as we prescribe, but they're still considered non-essential at this time.
Thank you. There are, as you can imagine, having attended town meetings yourself for many years, a number of questions that have come in regarding town meetings and the safe conduct of town meetings. While legislation has passed allowing communities to delay their town meetings, of course, there's a lot of interest in holding them. We know legislation is pending that would potentially reduce quorums and allow for communities to conduct some business and even allow representative town meetings to potentially explore or have an option of exploring virtual meetings. But for the vast majority of town meetings, they're smaller communities with open town meetings. Is Will the reopening committee be taking a look at those types of protocols, or is that still a public health driven decision about holding town meetings and what the best practices would be in order to ensure safety?
Well, as part of our orders that exist now, there is a limit on the size of a gathering. That is still at the size of 10 or under. The advisory board, in concert with the COVID Command Center and DPH, are evaluating the gathering sizes and what could potentially change given the public health metrics. We'll be looking at what other states are doing around us on that measure. And at the same time, looking at things like what daycare and summer camps should look like as we begin to reopen certain parts of our economy. So that gathering size is being studied and analyzed and may change depending on what the metrics look like. And that may also help dictate the size of a town meeting gathering or a public meeting gathering. So it's just today it's premature to say what that's going to look like, as it's still under review and analysis.
Thank you. We do know that is a pressing concern for our towns, but we know that you know that as well, and you're working to provide as much guidance and information as possible. Part of the issue for communities is trying to figure out if there are safe social distancing or physical distancing that can take place in very large auditoriums or something like that. But communities are struggling, and perhaps will be developing their own practices and experimenting, but hopefully, and we know, not doing so in a way that would endanger any person or individual. We do have a question regarding the desire. Actually, it's more of a statement asking that when the advisory board makes its report to the Commonwealth and you and the governor take action on that, that there be clear direction on a whole range of municipal services such as senior centers and libraries, because that direction will provide guidance for communities in terms of how they resume their operations. And so there was a request as to whether or not you'd be developing clear directives for cities and towns for their operations, and whether or not we'll be getting guidance before then regarding pools and summer camps. This is a question that's continued to come up at every one of our sessions. I know that mid-May is what you've said for the summer camps and summer pools, we hope, advisories, but communities are doing their budgeting and their hiring and their permitting right now. So any updates on either of those two areas of the work?
Yeah, that's obviously a pressing issue on summer camps, youth sports and activities. We are working with DPH and EEC on what the safety protocols will look like for those activities. We hope to have more specific guidance on that in mid-May, around the same time that the reopening plan is shared. It's that in concert with, so it's childcare, summer camps, gathering sizes, all of these relate, and that's where the public health folks are spending time analyzing. Think about the same with graduations. We're getting a lot of requests. Should we hold our graduation ceremonies in person? If they're outdoors, is that better? Or should we still be planning for a remote ceremony and then maybe pivot to an in-person gathering if things change? And that's really where things are right now. So this is something we should just keep on our list each week and discuss. I'd like to also say that as part of the advisory board, while we are engaging industry stakeholders, we also have subgroups that are working on subjects like, you know, hospitals. When will they be bringing back elective procedures? We have a work group on childcare, a work group on summer school and fall school reopening. We have a work group on higher education, a work group on state government and what services will be resuming over a phased-in approach. We have a work group on municipalities and a work group on recreation and outdoors. So I guess the answer to your question is there are a lot of parallel work streams in addition to evaluating workplaces and the reopening plan for that purpose.
Thank you very much. We know that the MMA and local officials are being given the opportunity to offer input to the municipal group as well as to the broad advisory board. And of course, we always have the opportunity to provide input to you. So we appreciate that very much. The clear guidance for communities will be very helpful in a number of areas. We look forward to working with you on that. Before we have updates from other entities or entities, individuals who are on the call from the administration, there is a question as to whether or not the administration has yet received guidance from the federal government regarding the community development block grant money. As of last week, you still had not received that. There's about $20 million that would be available to help invest in economic development efforts in non-entitlement communities all across the state. And we know that you're getting ready to go, or you want to go on that. But I was wondering if there's an update as to whether or not there's enough guidance or even the funds have been received from the federal government yet.
Okay. I don't have the answer to that question. I don't know if Sean or someone else from my office has that information. I have a feeling if we had it, then we would be discussing it. So I don't have an answer. Sean, do you?
No, Lieutenant Governor, I don't either.
I can get an answer while I'm still on the call. I'll just get back to you with that answer before the end of our session today.
Thank you very much. So there are a number of finance-related questions that are coming in, so it might make sense to have Sean give a very quick update, and then we'll see if there are other questions that come in for the Lieutenant Governor.
All right, so my very quick update, it's related to the bill that Senate Ways and Means put out yesterday. There's five items that I think are of interest. The first is for town meetings, proposed reduction in quorum down to no less than 10% of what it otherwise would be, which mirrors what happened in Marblehead. They went to court, were able to reduce their 300-person quorum to 30. There's provision in there that would allow for remote town meeting for representative town meetings. There's a provision in there that would allow town meetings to meet outside town borders. So if there was a facility, town or two over in a nearby city that could work social distance-wise for town meetings, there's a provision that allows for that. There's also the provision in there that we've talked about for the last couple of weeks of around city budgets. It basically takes that timetable, removes that timetable for when mayors need to submit a budget. That's included in there. And then lastly, the issue that I know we've had some incoming at DLS on this quote-unquote services rendered issue related to the letter that Jesse Commissioner Riley put out at the end of March. If you read the legislation, it basically allows communities with certain approvals to spend money on services that were rendered differently than they were originally anticipated when the contracts were signed. So check out that bill online and read the provisions. You can see what the proposal coming out of the legislature is. I think that's it actually on my end.
Thank you, Sean. One item on that is first on the MMA website, there's a link to a description of the bill and a link to the copy of the bill itself. And also on that last part about school and education related contracts, the legislation specifically provides that they would need to be, the revisions and changes in the contracts would need to be approved by the municipal executive, which is a provision that that we had asked for. So we appreciate it. I will note that there have been a number of questions regarding requests for links to the retail order that came out. We'll provide links to that and to all of the orders from the administration as a follow-up to this briefing in our invitation for the next briefing and in the story we post on the MMA website. Lieutenant Governor, do you have any, you have a few more minutes with us?
I will. I'll just stay on until I need to go, but I'd like to hear what else is on everyone's minds.
Excellent. Thank you. One question that's come in is regarding if you can share this, if you know at this stage, if the reopening committee is envisioning phases that are longer than, say, just 2 weeks, or whether or not there would be a lead-in to each phase, some period of notification so that there'd be preparation and planning for each level of activity. Has the committee drilled down on how the phases would work?
Yes, that's a very good question, and it's one that we are analyzing. And, you know, since one of the benefits, and there's really very few we can find in this, right, is that we're one of the later blooming states in terms of the virus, so we can look at other states and their approaches to reopening. A lot of other states have allowed for some time period between phases. Some have been more prescriptive around like a 2 week period of time, and some have left it more open. But I think there's a consensus that a time period is needed in order to evaluate when there is more activity and movement, to evaluate whether there is a spread or something that needs to be managed better before adding more activity beyond that. So when I think about the phases in the forward movement, if something happened that triggered, if it's an outbreak or a spike in hospitalizations and a spike in COVID positive numbers, there might need to also be a reverse trigger to then close down activity in order to contain. So the reason why the slow roll and the cautious approach and doing this in a methodical way is so that we avoid having a setback like that. So the answer to your question is yes, on the time to evaluate literally like the conditions in the field in the communities of our Commonwealth. And so that is a question for this group, and maybe we can discuss it further next week, are the kinds of things that you could help us with. So take, for instance, when we had our grocery stores operating as an essential business to provide food and supply to individuals. And look at all the things we learned through you, because you were literally there on the front line saying there's too many people in the store. The older folks that want to get in don't want to mix in with everyone else. And eventually the guidance became more specific and the system was put in place to limit the capacity and have the social distancing in place, and now requiring that face coverings are on the workforce as well as the customers. So you are the ones that are going to see things literally in your communities and can be a direct conduit to us to understand what's happening. So I think there's a further conversation that we need to have with you to support you in understanding what the conditions are, to have a process of communication so that we can assess the conditions together.
Thank you. Yes, well, we'll have that as a subject for the update next week. And also, it's I think that part of the reason why the MMA is hearing so much from local officials, hoping that the the guidelines, the guidance are specific and clear is so that there's less ambiguity and challenges of having to spend a few weeks or even longer with communities having their own experiences that are challenging and then having that bubble up and so on. So the clearer the health requirements and standards are, then the more effective communities can be in working in real time to provide you with that feedback and input. There's a question as to whether or not you consider, as we move away from the essential, non-essential, to the allowing retail establishments, is a question about curbside cannabis, perhaps, and whether or not, much like restaurant takeout, is that an area that the advisory commission is looking at, or is that an area that the CCC, the Cannabis Control Commission, would regulate?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The cannabis industry has requested time before the advisory board, and will be presenting this week around some scenarios for us to consider on expanding adult sales in the Commonwealth. Now, that's an industry that has an essential component. So there is the current process of medical cannabis being distributed, and we'll want to learn from them about how they're doing that, what they've learned, and it's more of a, like you, I think, just described, more of a curbside opportunity. So once we get them in front of us this week, we'll be able to assess what the next step is after May 18th.
Very good, thank you. Just a sample of how many different issues and questions you must be dealing with over time. While you're here, we know that you've been a champion of Chapter 90, we have been talking with Public Works and departments, and they're 100% sure that they can move forward with Chapter 90 projects with safe distancing and construction practices. All we're waiting for is a Chapter 90 authorization. So do you have an update in terms of...
Yeah, that, I don't know, Sean, if you have that, but we'd like to see these public works projects continue. That when we talk about sort of the benefits of this, we've been able to conduct a lot of public construction in areas that were once very congested or not congested, and we're able to get some of this work done. So clearly at the municipal level, the public works projects are really important. Sean, I'd like to hear from you if you have an answer on the status of the Chapter 90. So of course, getting that into the municipal hands is really important.
Yeah, Lieutenant Governor, as Jeff said, just waiting on the legislature to pass the authorization. And once that will happen, then I know MassDOT can turn around the award letters. But to the associated with that, to the extent that municipalities still have some old authorization under previous authorizations, that they could take advantage of that. But in terms of new funding, we need the legislature to pass another authorization bill.
And the challenge there that's being addressed right now is a bond bill requires a two-thirds roll call vote. And so the legislature is working to put in place remote voting procedures so they can work on bond bills, such as the bill that you filed regarding state cash flow, borrowing in anticipation of any fiscal 20 needs, and also transportation investments. So that's hopefully will move quickly, and we know that you will release the funds as soon as the legislature acts. I do have, we do know that Dr. Madoff and Director Phillips are on and have potentially a few minutes each to provide a quick update. We don't want to miss that as an opportunity. Right now I'll turn it to Dr. Madoff and then Director Phillips for some updates from their departments.
Thank you very much, Jeff, and thank you all for joining us today. We really appreciate you making time for these calls. The Department of Public Health has been trying to be involved in these stakeholder calls since the start of the pandemic, and we are committed to updating you and answering questions, and I'm certainly around for any questions that come up. We are committed to transparency, sharing the facts and data surrounding the pandemic, and I hope you've all seen our new daily dashboard, not so new. It's been a couple of weeks now that we're posting to the website every day around 4, that offers case and testing data, hospitalizations, healthcare capacity, race ethnicity data, cumulative numbers, and trends over time. We are proud of this dashboard. It's one of the most comprehensive daily reports in the country, and it's been featured nationally as an example of how to be transparent about our status in the outbreak. I just will give you a quick update on the numbers in Massachusetts. As of yesterday afternoon, we reported another 1,000 cases, bringing us to 69,000 cases in the Commonwealth. We continue in Massachusetts to lead on testing. In terms of per capita testing, we are actually the first in the country in terms of the numbers of tests. And we've done now over 324,000 tests, both here at the state lab and at commercial and hospital labs throughout the state. But we know that we need to do more to get to Secretary Sutter's goal of about 35,000 tests a day, at least in May. We've reached also a very sad milestone with more than 4,000 deaths to date from COVID in Massachusetts. We are continuing to support our healthcare clinicians, our first responders in the field. A top priority of the department continues to be finding and bringing PPE to Massachusetts to meet the needs of our healthcare and public health partners. So we are literally working around the clock to try to do that. And I know you've heard of shortages, and we are experiencing shortages in many places in the state. We've also expanded our bed capacity with field hospitals, and we want to encourage residents to seek treatment for both COVID and non-COVID illness, recognizing that we have fortunately been able to maintain the capacity of our healthcare system. We are continuing to expand our efforts on testing and contact tracing. The COVID-19 Community Tracing Collaborative is ramping up to 1,000 staff. This is in partnership with our department, local boards of health, and the Partners in Health organization. And the goal is to provide support to confirmed cases and identify and reach out to their contacts quickly. We have ramped up mobile testing at our facilities throughout the state, including our long-term care facilities and other residential congregate care sites using the National Guard. And National Guard is also helping us with staffing in some of these facilities. And I know the Lieutenant Governor has mentioned our opening up process, and the Baker-Polito administration's announcement of its reopening advisory board that our DPH commissioner, Monica Burrell, serves on. And we will ensure that public health and safety are among the foremost priorities. The board is seeking and receiving comments from all sectors of the economy, and will be reporting out on May 18th. We have learned many lessons from this virus, and we continue to learn more each day. And some of those lessons are about our resilience as a community and the importance of public health and the importance of working together with all of you in partnership. And we really appreciate all that you are doing amidst these really unprecedented challenges. I'll turn it back to Jeff now. Thank you very much. And I'll be around for questions if there are any.
Great, thank you. There are a few questions that have come in, but first I want to check in with the Lieutenant Governor to see if your schedule has you departing imminently. If not, then we'll go to Director Phillips, and then back to questions.
I'm here until 1, so I'll stay on. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Now, Director Phillips, do you have from MEMA, do you have an update for us or any short bursts?
Sure, I'll be very brief. Thank you for having me. I think there are, you know, five primary things that I want to just touch on. We continue to support the distribution of personal protective equipment. So to date, we've filled over 3,000 different orders. So we're working in close partnership with the Department of Public Health on PPE. They focus on hospitals, nursing facilities, and we focus on PPE to municipalities and congregate care shelters and funeral directors and a whole host of other stakeholders, actually many very new stakeholders that we've never had the pleasure of partnering with during disasters. That continues, and we're really standing by and starting to have conversations about PPE in terms of reopening and many of the things the Lieutenant Governor touched on earlier this afternoon. Very important that we encourage our local municipalities to register through our website for FEMA assistance. So through the major presidential disaster declaration, we have stood up a pretty robust operation here to help with getting those reimbursements into the system, working specifically on targeted outreach on complex projects. So those would be communities that might have tents at homeless shelters or isolation and recovery hotels or alternate care sites. We're doing a lot of targeted outreach on some of the sort of atypical programs that we have been involved in related to COVID. Right on the MEMA homepage is the access information about how to access the funding for the major disaster declaration. A few other quick things on the FEMA front. We renewed our non-congregate medical sheltering program for another month. And we've actually expanded some categories. So for those communities that might be doing non-congregate medical sheltering, previously it was first responders and supporting homeless individuals. It's expanded a little bit to include some other categories. And soon we've been doing a lot of work around food security, just recognizing that that's sort of a new hot button issue just due to individuals who are isolating or quarantining in their home, individuals who are now under or unemployed because of COVID. And so that's another new work stream. And then just while I have this group, I think it's important that we start to think about longer term operations. We will be rapidly approaching hurricane season. And so, you know, working with our partners at the local level, your emergency management directors, just making sure that we are really thinking about what other disaster response looks like in a COVID environment, you know, sheltering at greater distance and evacuation planning, et cetera. So that's a new initiative we're taking on. So I'll stop there. But again, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you very much. We appreciate your being here and all of the work that your agency is doing with communities. The couple of questions that came in regarding testing and actual results. So Dr. Madoff, maybe you can help. There are many communities that are concerned that they don't have the resources to conduct testing. They don't have medical facilities to partner with. And so any thought about how going forward the Department of Public Health will help ensure that all regions and communities have access to testing, and then also the provision of that community by community information so the communities can have real-time results.
Thanks, Jeff. These are challenging times for all of us, as I'm sure you're aware. And we recognize that there's a desire and need for additional testing, and we're working very hard to try to provide that and stand that up. We are primarily at this point trying to address the constraints that come up with regard to testing. And it seems like every time we're able to solve one issue, a new issue arises. So, you know, we're able to get more laboratory testing on board, but then there are supply problems with swabs or PPE or the transport media or personnel who are able to do the testing. And we understand that that's a limitation for many communities. When it's possible to partner with a healthcare provider, that is an excellent way to go about it. I would ask that if there are individual communities that are trying to develop testing, it's something that that we can work with them on, and in collaboration with the command center, try to come up with creative solutions for bringing on board testing. I would point out that at this point, all providers can do testing, and there are no limitations on who can be tested or can't be tested. There were times when, you know, only people who met certain criteria could be tested because there were so few tests available. But now any provider in working with a patient can have that patient tested, and those results can be shared with the provider and will routinely be shared with the Department of Public Health and with the community testing collaborative. I hope that answers to some extent. I realize that's not a completely satisfying answer, but it is something that we will that we will continue to work on. In terms of reporting at the town level, that is currently done on a weekly basis, and I understand the desire to have that more frequent and more granular. And I will bring that message to those who develop the dashboard and display our metrics, and hope that we can do something to make that more frequent and routine.
Thank you very much. I know that there are lots of questions, and as usual, what we'll do, since we're coming up on the 1 o'clock hour, is that we will provide these to the administration and share what responses are available back to everyone, and both in the invitations to future briefings and also on the MMA website. Lieutenant Governor, as we wrap up, there's one final question and then you can give some closing words. I've been asked about the $130 million for funding for nursing homes and assisted living facilities. Some communities report that they've been working to try and get PPE their local senior care facilities. And is that money available to support that effort, or is that those funds for a different purpose?
Yeah, well, the need can be served. So whether it's from that fund or through Sam's effort or others, if I know the community or the nursing home that's in need of PPE, we will work directly with them to help support them in that effort. So pass that along to us directly, and we will contact them. I'd like to just give a final word on the HUD for CDBG funds. There's still no word from HUD on receipt of these funds, but we're thinking of finalizing the notice of funding availability in the next couple of weeks, and we could proceed with the solicitation of applications from communities, but can't award on those applications until we receive the funds from HUD. So that is the update on the CDBG funds.
Thank you very much. There's a lot going on, and we have you 20 seconds extra. So any final words before we...
There's a lot. I mean, there's an hour goes by so fast, and there's so much question or uncertainty in certain areas. So we definitely would like to hear what those concerns are, and we will follow up. And I just know that as we prepare for this next phase, we have to do this together. We did hear a lot from the business community and organizations around the partnership between state and local government and how important that is. So we have to do our part, like you said, with clear guidance, and to be able to support you with that to help you do your enforcement work locally. So let's talk about that a little bit more next week. And thank you to all the mothers on the call, to those who have mothers in your life. You enjoy a wonderful day on Sunday in whatever way you can to honor them.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Happy Mother's Day to you. And I think you'll be working on this Mother's Day, probably.
They understand. We'll figure something out for sure.
Well, thank you very much for the partnership with you and the governor. Thank you to Sean Cronin and Sam Phillips and Dr. Larry Madoff for being on this briefing. We will be meeting again with another edition, the 8th, coming up next Tuesday. The MMA will send out that invitation. In the meantime, we'll provide what answers we can to our members and continue to work in close partnership with the administration on behalf of all of the cities and towns of Massachusetts. To the 250 local officials from across the state who joined us for this briefing, thank you very much for your leadership, for your service, and for making a difference, saving lives all throughout this Commonwealth every single day. You have a good day, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.